Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show, brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank, quick question for you this evening, and it's quite highbrow. It's not a quiz. It's quite serious as a question. Have you claimed from the Unemployment Insurance Fund? Have you found the Unemployment Insurance Fund to be supportive of your situation? Once you've lost either your ability to work or you've lost your job and you can't get another one, and so you go to UIF and say, I've been paying this insurance for years and years and years. Could I have a monthly payout, please, until I get myself sorted? I wonder. Daniel, who's a very good and regular communicator with The Money Show, as you could be too, saying the Unemployment Insurance Fund has an actuarial surplus of 133 billion rand. Given that it pays 9 billion rand a year in claims and receives double that via levies, it seems excessive. Given the massive risk Eskom poses to the economy, surely a big portion of that could be used to de-risk Eskom. Could you investigate the UIF surplus, please? Now, I don't know enough about that, Daniel, but if anybody has got an insight to it, I would feel uncomfortable using the UIF to bail out government, because it's not government's piggy bank. It's not the petty cash slush fund that you dip into when you need a little top-up of the national budget. I wouldn't be comfortable with it. In a time of crisis, would it be legitimate, however, to dip in? Maybe borrow money from the from UIF? Would it ever get paid back? I wonder. Some views, please, on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567, or you could drop us an SMS.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106
FM. So what has come out of Davos other than lots of stuffed shirts on private jets? I guess the best thing that seems to have left Davos is ideas. And then it's up to the delegates to inspire the rest of us to make those ideas come to fruition. The idea of achieving a single market in Africa, it's not a new idea, but it does seem to be getting greater attention. Fund manager of the African Equities Fund at Ashburton Investments is Paul Clark on the line to us from Johannesburg this evening. Paul, this concept of the single market in Africa, slow, painful, steady progress, but still slow and painful nevertheless.
Good evening, Bruce. Yes, I think the most important thing was the Continental Free Trade Area Agreement that was signed last year in March. And there was quite a lot of talk about that at Davos. And clearly, it's at this stage, very early days. But, you know, regional markets are not new to the continent. I mean, South Africa is part of the SADC region. We're also part of COMESA, and that makes it easier for, you know, countries to export and import into each other without tariffs. But, you know, it was very important that, 49 countries signed the protocol, last year. And I think it will, as it develops and as it opens up, create enormous opportunities for intra-Africa trade, which at the moment is only 12%. And a lot of that is centered in certain countries. So, and region. So, you know, it'll certainly help to do that. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how the fourth industrial revolution can help Africa to industrialize, and how the continent can industrialize. And if we allow transport and of goods and ideas and people, especially across borders, we can create value chains where certain parts and components are built in country and then assembled in other countries. So, you know, all of these things are great future potential ideas, and hopefully as things move forward, the continent can grow and this can help grow the GDP.
And that's lovely and really good. But all of the conversations that I've seen in Davos around this issue are all talking about the same stuff. And it's the stuff that's been topical for more than a decade. And that is work permits, it's visas for Africans across this continent. We don't trust each other enough across this continent. We just got to look at the issues of xenophobia at home to consider the potential complexity of this newfound freedom that we're looking to exercise.
Yes, it is. It is rather unfortunate, but what we're starting to see is many homegrown pan-African businesses and regional businesses, and as those happen, in order to transfer skills and to transfer best operating practice and so on and so forth, companies are starting to want to move their management teams around a lot more, and maybe say to a struggling subsidiary in another country, and it is quite difficult to do. But luckily, last year in January, we did have a protocol signed at the AU about the movement of people, and there's a lot more talk about the African passport. We're starting to see Rwanda, for example, drop visa requirements for many Africans. So there's definitely movement forward, and I think as time moves on, it will improve. You know, Africa, if we look at business conditions across the continent, you know, there are certainly a lot of improvements in making business easier to do across the continent. And last year, a third of all the changes that happened, according to the World Bank, in improving business in the entire world happened in sub-Saharan Africa. You know, these are changes to regulations, et cetera, et cetera. So certainly opening a business is a lot faster in many African countries than it was 10 years ago. And so, you know, all these things slowly but surely are making the continent better. And over the last 10 years, business conditions on aggregate have improved across the continent. So, you know, that makes life better for everybody who's trying to improve the lives of others.
Forgive my impatience, but does it have to move at this glacial pace? Is there a reason for that? Can we not sort of light a fire under this and get things moving quicker?
You know, there's always calls for politicians to get more involved and to be more helpful. And I guess, you know, the nation states in Africa are relatively new. And many of the nation states we have across the continent started, you know, their lives subsequent to when the European Union had its origins in the 50s. So, yes, it does seem like it's slow, but remember that these things are complicated and do take a long time. But the big positive is that things are moving forward, and I think that's what's more important. People are talking about it, and things are moving forward, and that's what matters most, rather than it's going backwards at any rate.
Paul Clark, thank you, the fund manager for African Equities at Ashburton Investments. Was Friday funky on the Money Show. Wow, okay, we're moving up in the world. President Cyril Ramaphosa headed home from Davos via India. Now we see China slowing down, India still with plenty of potential to expand, and plenty of opportunity for South African business in India, and importantly, lots of opportunity in South Africa for legitimate Indian business to flourish here. Two-day visits at scale of the aim, strengthening relations between South Africa and India, and Narendra Modi, the India Prime Minister, will honour President Ramaphosa with the designation of Chief Guest. That's a nice title to have at India's 70th Republic Day celebrations. Abdullah Varacha is faculty member at Gibbs. Beyond the pomp and ceremony, what useful issues are going to emerge from this, Abdullah?
Good evening, Bruce, and good evening to your listeners. It's a pleasure to be with you. I think, there's lots of pomp and ceremony, and I think the Indians take Republic Day as very serious. And it's very interesting that they selected President Ramaphosa as the chief guest. The last time a South African president was the chief guest was 1995, when President Mandela went across. It's important to note that President Ramaphosa was not the first choice as chief guest. President Donald Trump was initially invited. He declined the invitation, and then President Ramaphosa was extended the invitation. The choice of chief guest is always important, because when you the head of state that's selected as the chief guest is obviously strategic. At one stage, four years ago, it was President Francois Hollande. President Barack Obama, when he was chief guest 3 years ago, went across to India, and that fundamentally changed the relationship between India and the U.S. So I think it's very interesting, the choice of chief guest, and the Indians really go out of the way in terms of rolling out the red carpet in Delhi towards the chief guest. But beyond the pomp and ceremony, and back to your question, what is it that's strategic in terms of this partnership? I think, one, it's an interesting year for both heads of state, right? Modi and his party go through an election in April, May this year, at a similar time that the ANC and President Ramaphosa goes into an election in South Africa. And so it's an interesting, perhaps, tense time for both heads of state in terms of being an election year. I think the visit is up in terms of seeing how we can drive the bilateral trade and investment relationship. What's come out? I think one of the big ones that obviously your news has been running with the potential opportunity for Danel into India. You know, Danel was obviously blacklisted in India in 2005, and at the BRICS summit last year, obviously, hands was extended and the Supreme Court lifted the charge. And the chairperson of Danel is obviously on the trip, and there's potential opportunity, I think, that will spin out from there. India is ramping up its defense spend, and so I think it's obviously strategic for both sides that there's this opportunity from a health perspective. So that's one. I think the second one is a few years ago, and you're starting to see that come out now in the State Capture Commission. We had direct flights by Jet Airways and Airways into India. Both those flights stopped, and I've been told that those flights, will definitely get a direct flight coming out this year from India to South Africa, and that will obviously increase tourism, trade, investment, business leaders being able to travel across. So those are two that I think are significant. The third one is obviously India and Modi specifically have really been aggressive in terms of the digital economy, the fourth industrial revolution, driving that next wave of IT investments coming out of India. And I think it's a particular interest area for President Ramaphosa. I think he's expressed on it. And that's why Minister Stella Ndaweni is obviously on the trip as well. And so I think there's obviously strategic partnerships from a digital economy perspective.
Good news indeed, Abdullah Varacha. Thank you. Not a great cell phone signal for us this evening, but we got the point being made by Abdullah Varacha this evening, who is part of the faculty at Gibbs. And my entire phone system has just bailed on me, George. So could you put my caller up, please? Kaya Sitole has given us a call. Political analyst Kaya Sitole. You want to talk, Kaya, about about what's happening with the unemployment insurance fund?
Yeah, Bruce, and I think one of the interesting things that we have in South Africa is that National Treasury doesn't like ring-fence funds. And ring-fence funds are the ones like the UIF and the Road Accident Fund. And the problem that you tend to have with them is that one tends to be in a huge surplus and the other tends to be in a huge deficit. The primary reason for that is that if you look at the Unemployment Insurance Fund, there is a lot of certainty around the contributions that come in. So 1% of payroll up to a maximum amount every single month goes into the UIF, and then it spends money on the people that qualify for unemployment benefits. If you look at the Road Accident Fund, on the other hand, essentially it's an unlimited expense profile because it depends on the nature of accidents and the number of accidents that we have every single year. So the key problem here is that the law currently doesn't allow the government to switch money from one ring-fence fund to another. So we've got one huge deficit on the RAF and one big surplus on the unemployment insurance fund. Now, the question of whether this fund should then be used to bail out entities like Eskom is a difficult one, because then the question would be, if we are going to tap into this fund simply because it has a surplus, how did we work out that solving Eskom was the most pressing social need? So only if
exactly. I mean, and there's a reason. There's a reason why these funds were ring-fenced. They were ring-fenced by the people who set them up because they didn't want them pillaged by politicians who've been mismanaging the economy.
Yeah, and I think the problem here is that if you then start tapping into this fund, you may as well just consolidate all of them altogether, because then the next set of politicians will decide that perhaps running a political campaign is a pressing issue of the day, and then they'll tap into those funds. What we should be learning as a country is to then say, how do we make more funds that are administered by the state have the type of prudence and, you know, actuarial surplus that the unemployment insurance fund has? And it really goes back to the design of it. When you design it, do you know what the source of contributions is and what is it that you're going to spend the money on? And if in the design you can see that this thing will never make a surplus, then don't create it at all, because you're literally just creating a meaningless fund. The Road Accident Fund is the greatest tragedy and the greatest exhibit of this problem.
No, and I mean, each one of us could depend on it at some point in the future, and it's a shambles. Kaya, thanks very much for your call and for that explanation this evening on why we cannot treat the UIF as a national piggy bank.
EWN Traffic.
You can expect more than a 40-minute delay from Sunning Hill to Soweto on the N1 South between Rivonia Road and the Deep Kloof Interchange in El Dorado Park. There's about a 30-minute delay on the N12 westbound between the N1 and the R554. This is due to faulty traffic lights. There's also more than a 20-minute delay on the M1. This is in both directions between the Buccleuch Interchange and Killarney Bends. In Bryanston, you can also expect about a 20-minute delay on Grosvenor Road between Bryanston Drive and the N1 Bridge. In Hurlingham, there's slow-moving traffic traffic on William Nicol between Sterling and Republic. And in Olivenhout Bosch, traffic is heavily backed up on the R55 between Samrand and Summit. Karabo Tjali, EWN traffic.
EWN traffic.
I think the storms are causing all kinds of excitement for us this evening, and I apologize for breaks in transmission, and we're having one or two technical, challenges, and the storm is moving quite rapidly towards Centurion. They're still battling bravely on. We'll get an update in sport coming up in about 10 minutes' time. Nick Kunze is standing by from Sunland Private Wealth. We'll chat to him in just a little bit. Nick Kunze, are you with me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Bruce.
There we go. So you and I will chat about markets for a bit, because it was a good day. Markets actually ended in positive territory, and it was nice to see back above 54,000 on this Friday evening.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. We, even despite the stronger rand, there seems to be a real sort of risk on sentiment today. And I guess after all the shenanigans with retailers at the start of the week, we'll take a positive close.
Yeah, so good to buy, a good positive day, but your AVI's trading update just reinforcing all of the dreadful news that we've been getting out of the clothing retailers and out of so many sectors of South Africa's economy in recent days. Of trading updates and December sales numbers have been coming out, the likes of Vodacom and Massmart and others, that really being backed up by the AVI numbers too.
Yeah, what's the constant theme here, Bruce? I mean, it, between, as you said, Massmart and Vodacom and now AVR with their shock trading update, I mean, the constant theme is the SA consumer is severely under pressure, if not almost dead after, so much supposedly the Black Friday sales in November, December. I mean, this should have been a good trading period for these guys. And I think it just reiterates what you're saying, the SA consumer is severely under pressure, which...
Why is this taking the market by surprise to the extent that it is? Logically, one should have anticipated that the 2018 was going to be a dreadful year. We were in recession for half of it, with a higher VAT rate and with the fuel prices that went through the roof in the second half of last year, money just sort of disappeared out of people's pockets, and they had no control over their ability to spend.
I don't know why the market was so surprised. I completely agree with you. I mean, we knew with the VAT rise and fuel prices going as much as they did. I mean, it was very unlikely that we're going to get good trading updates from these guys. And if anything, this just reiterates that it certainly backs up a decision by our Reserve Bank to keep rates on hold. And I think any single sign of an indication of a rate rise is nowhere to be seen. But despite that, a really nice strong rand. I mean, under 1360 when I walked into the office.
Yeah, I mean, the rand-dollar exchange rate is strong, better against the pound and the euro as well, and that's because of weakening international currencies. Global geopolitics very much in the frame. That we aren't strengthening on the currency because we're visiting India or because we had a jolly good showing at Davos or anything like that.
Yeah, it's not Mr. Ramaphosa's jawboning, unfortunately. I think it's very much, as you said, this weaker dollar.
Yeah, I mean, what does surprise me, and I expressed my surprise last night on the show, is how much money is flooding into the banking shares. I mean, they've been cheap for a long time, and people have been avoiding them. The dividend yield has been tantalizing and tempting for a long time. But it strikes me that we've got to have something of a crisis, and the crisis has come in the form of the dreadful trading updates on the economy for people to take advantage of very juicy shares.
Look, I'm a little bit sort of a head scratch on this one. I mean, surely, the one take you look at these, the consumer being under pressure, naturally you expect the banks to be under pressure too. That's despite obviously the stronger rand. But yeah, I mean, these banks are absolutely on fire. I mean, Absa, I think 2.5% up, Nedbank 2.9%, and just really strong across the board. So it doesn't quite equate that these banks should be so strong. But as you said, I guess maybe for overseas investors, a juicy dividend, as you point out. And they're not expensive either. These banks are as cheap as they've been in a while.
Yeah, Standard Bank was up 4% to 195 Rand. We haven't seen it there for ages. Nedbank and Absa and First Rand were all positive. Are you feeling optimistic about this market this year? There's lots of jaw and talking, saying, oh, it's going to be good because last year was so bad. I've given up on that kind of logic. How are you feeling?
Okay, well, I'm a stockbroker and it's January, so I've got to live in hope in this particular case. And I do not want to have a client open a statement again like we did at the end of last year. No, I think, Bruce, there is a certain certain level of optimism. And look, we've got a lot of speed bumps coming our way with potential speed bumps, you know, with elections in May. And look, I guess a risk on day like today, I mean, the pound, bizarrely strong, 131 against the dollar, you know, that's telling you one's a positive Brexit, possibly. You know, the US markets, where they are, you know, possibly telling you like a decent outcome with, despite the close, a decent outcome maybe with the Chinese trade talk. So there seems to be a lot of optimism, and I guess we'll take the optimism in South Africa. Yeah.
We'll take every bit of optimism we possibly can. Nick Kunze, thanks very much for coming in. He is with Sanlam Private Wealth. Coming up on the Next Money Show, the legendary soccer star Lucas Radebe. He's going to be joining us in studio on Make Money Mondays. Tell us all about his time at Leeds, at Bafana Bafana, and how he got a pop group named after Kaizer Chiefs, of course. And keeping with the football theme, it's all about how to make football teams successful. Professor Damien Hughes has written a book called The Barcelona Way, and it's all about the key principles that have defined the Barcelona Football Club and what have made it one of the world's absolute leaders. That's all next time on The Money Show.
702. Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Play the Brutal Biz quiz in just a little bit, but first let's bring you some of the best bits from The Money Show from the week that has been, and what a busy old week it has been. The state's pension fund, the government employees pension fund, and it's managed, of course, by the Public Investment Corporation. PIC suspended two officials this week for flouting governance rules over investments in the local technology firm IO Technology Solutions. We spoke to the PIC's chair, the deputy finance, Mr. Monty Gungubele, and he ordered an investigation, and I asked him whether or not we could still trust the PIC.
The point I'm making now is that we've made an investigation, Bruce. The information solid is before us. We've looked at the profile of the information. It is so credible. That's why we are even unashamed to give it to the commission so that they can know what is it that we responded to.
I hear you on this particular incident, and you say this deal was flawed and raised issues about governance and approval processes of the PIC. But how can you be certain that this rot doesn't extend further into the Public Investment Corporation, that this goes beyond just IO Technologies?
Well, life is about possibilities, Bruce. I'm saying we are dealing with this one now, which is before us. And in response to your question, there's always a possibility that you can deal with one, it can expose you to something else. But we can deal with that when we cross that bridge.
Are you worried about the credibility of the PIC as a whole as a result of this expose?
We remember last year, we parted with the CEO. One of the reasons we parted with the CEO was that we were dealing with what was before us there and the uncertainty about the institution in the public eye. And as a result of that, we decided to agree with the CEO on what should be done between us and him. The reason we were worried about a lot of questions about the institution, that's why we appreciated that the president put together this commission of inquiry.
Well, Commission of Inquiry, boy, oh boy, oh boy, we're seeing the PIC under the cosh, we're seeing half of South Africa under the cosh at the State Capture Commission. Of course, we have the SARS inquiry as well. We had a great discussion with the founders, one of the co-founders of We Buy Cars this week. Van von der Volt is his name. He was this week's shapeshifter. He told us about the rationale of considering OLX's 1.4 billion rand offer to acquire the startup.
They approached us sometime last year, you know, just getting a feel whether we'd consider getting into a relationship with them. And we explored the options, and I don't think many people know this, but Naspers owns various other car buying companies overseas. So they're also sitting on certain technologies that we'd like to adopt in our business, and therefore it made sense to do a deal with them. It's not a sale of shares as such. They are subscribing for more shares in our business, which will mean a significant cash injection that will, you know, put us in a position to grow more rapidly and to improve and expand our service.
Will you and your brother keep control?
Yes. Part of they said at least for the foreseeable future we need to be in charge because they don't want to run a business. They trust us. We've done well so far. So it will be business as usual.
And that is Faan van der Walt, one of the co-founders, of course, of We Buy Cars. Well, World Economic Forum in Davos wrapping up today. It's the big financial news story of the week, although it's very little to do with money. It's all about connections and maybe future money. We touch base with CNN's Richard Quest, and I asked him if the world's leaders are in fact unified in their view that the global economy is slowing down and coming to a slow and sticky end.
Yes, exactly. And when we got the IMF new economic data showing a slowdown at the beginning of the week, which was coupled with the Chinese data showing it under 6.6% and added into a variety of reports, PwC's CEO survey, Edelman's Trust Barometer. Everybody talked themselves into quite a frenzy of pessimism. And I would say yesterday that the people started saying, hang on a second, we know there's a slowdown on the way. We know things are going to be a little bit tougher, but we're not heading to recession. We're not, maybe not technically in some places there will be, but not for the rest of us. We're not heading to recession. We're not heading to anything like 2008 and 2009. And so, Bruce, on our world of worries, a list that people have been putting up on the wall, pessimism is a worry. Too much pessimism has been one of the most popular.
Have you found an optimist at Davos other than yourself this year?
Oh, tons of them. You're going to ask me to name them. I can't think of any.
No. But I mean, not everybody's walking around gloomy.
Quite, absolutely, and quite the opposite. Those who are not gloomy are saying that those who are gloomy are too gloomy. And as a result, the gloominess that has been gloomy is not as gloomy as when it's gloomy when it started.
He's never gloomy. Who would be gloomy when you're listening to Quest? Richard Quest this year, last night on The Money Show, as we looked at what was going down in Davos. Coming up in a moment, we'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz. Let's do that on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. First question tonight. I just gave you the answer to this question. It's not the Brutal Biz Quiz. It's the Biz Quiz. Nusbats-controlled OLX has placed a bid to acquire a stake in which second-hand car sales business? I'm not even going to repeat the question. I find it insulting to you and to me that should be the first question. 31702. No. 011-883-0702. 021-446-0567. Give us a shout. And let's play the Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Money Show is brought to you by NetBank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. NetBank. The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Every Friday night, I like to challenge your grey matter, test whether or not you've been paying attention, whether or not you know the business world inside out and backwards and back to front. So we like to test you. The Nusbats-controlled OLX has placed a bid for a second-hand car business. Bilal, which one is it?
We Buy Cars.
Absolutely. We spoke to Faan van der Walt. You heard Faan van der Walt a few moments ago. And if you missed it, you must download the podcast on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, because Faan told a really good story of a 17-year-old South African startup that is really now coming into its own. Brimstone has cast its net for more shares of which fishing company from Tiger Brands?
Is it I&J?
It's not I&J, Bilal, but thank you for trying. It was as good a guess as you were going to get this evening. Lindy has decided she's not fishing for that one. Quibus in Northcliff has decided to bail on us. Katlego in Centurion, oh my goodness gracious me. Brimstone, casting a net, more shares in a fishing company. Tiger Brands, I think, is a big shareholder still in this fishing company. What is the name of the fishing company? Katlego, Quibus. Bus. Leslie and Glen Hazel. At least you're not rude, Leslie. Thank you. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, Leslie. I'd be much happier if you got the correct answer to the question.
Well,
A big guess. Sea Harbour?
It's not, I'm afraid, Leslie, but thank you for at least not being rude. Refiel, where in Soweto this evening?
The answer is
Oceana. Oceana, of course it is. An empowerment store, what, proposing to spend 581 million rand to acquire 8 million shares from Tiger Brands. Which organization which purports to connect people like no other has turned 48 years old this year?
The question again, please?
I made it up as I went along. Which organization which purports to connect people across business and civil society and politics and everywhere is 48 years old this year?
World Economic Forum in Davos.
Absolutely right. World Economic Forum, based in Geneva in Switzerland, founded in 1971 as a not-for-profit organization, gained formal status in January 2015 under the Swiss Host State Act, confirming the role as the forum as an international institution for public-private cooperation. And by all accounts, South Africa's had a pretty good week at Davos in Switzerland. Refiel Wen Soweto is playing the Brutal Biz Quiz if you want to go up against him in case he drops the ball. 021-446-0567 011-883-0702. The German government is considering banning which company from providing 5G equipment in that country because it is concerned about security. It's the one that nobody can pronounce, Refiel. Well, let's see if you can pronounce it.
No, I do not know the answer.
Okay, Refiel Ware, thank you for playing this evening. Refiel Ware bailing on us tonight. 021-446-0567. Refiel Ware, 011-883-0702. Looking for you to play the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. The German government is worried about a particular mobile provider, and it's saying that it doesn't want it to provide 5G equipment in Germany, citing security concerns that are of high relevance. So which is the mobile provider that is out of favor in Germany? Cardo, hello.
Hello, Bruce, it's Huawei.
Huawei, absolutely right. Congratulations to you. But that's still not good enough to be called the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. You've got to work hard for it, Cardo. You've got to do that. Which prince has announced that he will no longer accept donations from Huawei?
Ooh. That's a tough one.
He's very old. No, you don't want to have a go. Okay, Cardo, thanks very much for playing this evening. It's not Prince Philip, because he's very, very old, and he had a big car crash this week. Apparently blinded by the sun. Not wearing seatbelts, the royals. Oof, all kinds of trouble in the United Kingdom about that, as if they don't have other things to worry about. Nelson, which prince has announced he won't accept donations from Huawei?
The
Queen of England is not a prince, I'm afraid, Nelson. She has some princes in her family, but she herself is not a prince, I'm afraid. The charity, and founded by this prince in 1976 to help vulnerable young people, said this week, at present, we're not accepting any new donations from Huawei in the light of public concerns. Future donations will continue to be reviewed by our ethical fundraising committee. And since 2007, this Prince's Trust has received nearly £500,000 in donations from Huawei. So, Tibogo, which prince has decided to be principled?
Hi, Bruce. It's Prince Charles.
It is Prince Charles, Tibogo. Congratulations. Juan Guaido is recognized by the United States and Canada as the president of which Latin American country?
Venezuela.
Venezuela is absolutely right. Tibogo, you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night. Thank you so much for playing. I had another great question, which I just don't have time to, but I would like to know the name of a whiskey brand that released a bottle that costs as much as a new Tesla car. The answer is Macallan. They're very funky marketers at Macallan. Macallan releasing 250 bottles of a 52-year-old single malt, which began the journey to maturation back when Lyndon Johnson was president and the Vietnam War raged. It's aged in European oak sherry seasoned casks from Spain and will carry a suggested retail price of 733,468 rand 95. Maybe they'll just make it 750 grand. And that's just about what it'll cost you to get the dual motor all-wheel drive version of the Tesla Model 3. Except you'd have to get it in red at that price. That's it from The Money Show for tonight and for this week. Thank you for playing. Thank you for playing the Brutal Biz Quiz tonight. And thank you so much for listening to The Money Show this week. You can do all the catch-ups via our podcasts, which are available for nothing. Just the cost of your data, of course. Unless you're on somebody else's Wi-Fi network, which is always a win. You can catch up over the weekend. Thanks for listening. Good night.